Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me to help unravel the mysteries are my good friends, the research and writing team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Well, good morning. We're ready to go.
I'm looking forward to it. And I will say to our listeners that if you have any questions or comments for us, our chat room is open, and you're more than welcome to post your questions there. I have a little confession to make to our listeners. Manny, Ashley, and I speak fairly frequently, and there's this little unwritten game we play. We try to outdo each other with stories of weird things that have happened to us. So, Manny, anything weird happened to you this week?
Well, you know, actually, I'm not sure what you're talking about. My whole life can be so weird. But, I think the weird thing is all these conversations. We have a guest today, Patrick, who we're going to introduce shortly, that brought up a lot of interesting things in our lives. And as I point out in my books, my parents were in the film industry as well as the catering and restaurant business. So during the 40s, 50s, and early 60s, my mother had contracts with all the major studios to feed actors. And in the course of that, Ashley reminded me of how interesting the stories were. And so a lot of today's show is going to be, how do you eat at work? And we're going to use the movie industry because so few of our listeners really know what goes on in a movie set. And they think everybody's getting New York steaks and lobster and the sets go beautifully. Because when they show a movie within a movie, there's always a guy with a white chef's cap and the beautiful apron going, and what do you want to eat? Well, it doesn't work that way, and we're going to tell some stories today of what it's really like, and Ashley can tell us what it was like to eat on location in Mexico and stories about her friends who make low-budget films and what goes on in the set there. So I thought I would tell one story to kick the show off, which probably says it all. In my generation, you know, a lot of us worked for our parents and started working very young. So my parents, like a lot of parents, found a way to keep their children off the streets in the summer. And we worked catering roles on movie locations. So a lot of times my two older brothers and I was the youngest, and by 11, my older brother was 16, and he would drive. So we would get what I would call the dirty work, a set out in nowhere. So you have to understand, this was 1955, 1956, California, Los Angeles. So my mother would hand my older brother this map, and one of the favorite places was Stunt Ranch, which is out in Malibu. So we'd either go from their place by Warner Brothers and Disney and Burbank, or from their place across from the Hollywood Chinese, and we would have to drive all the way to Stunt Ranch, which was in Malibu. No freeways, no 101 freeway, no San Diego freeway. We'd take the old route with a stoplight every four blocks in Ventura Boulevard. And we'd leave like 7 a.m., 8 a.m. to serve lunch at noon. It would take at least 2 to 2.5 hours for a drive that's now 35 minutes. And when we got there, there was Stunt Ranch. Now is a beautifully paved road that goes to the top of the hill that has a spacious view of Malibu, and it's wonderful. But when I was a kid, it was a ranch, and they did Western shows and things there, and it was dirt. So we'd check in at the ranch house, and they would hand us this map of the mountains with an X on it. And they'd go, well, they're shooting up in that mountain, follow this dirt road. And we'd have to go up, and of course, my brother was driving one of those old, GMC vans, which had a compound load, much like the new U.S. SUVs. And we'd climb these dirt roads, sometimes getting lost all over the place, and eventually we'd find this set. So they'd be on a hill somewhere shooting. You know, they'd have maybe 20, 30 extras, not extras so much, but wranglers shooting cows and cattle in the pen or horses or whatever, with a spacious view of the valley, which is now full of homes. And so we'd have to set up tables halfway up the hill, find rocks to balance them, because if not, the food would slide off the end. So we'd be feeding all, just 20 or 30 people. So here are these three teenage kids wandering around serving meals and trying to keep them happy. When we're done, we had to pack up and find a way out of there. And then some days we'd serve lunch, and then we'd serve, we'd stay on the set, and sometimes we'd even work as extras. And we would serve cold cuts for a late meal, like 5 or 6, so we'd get out there, and it would be late, so we'd have to wander home and come home in the dark. In the summer, that was up to like 110 degrees sometimes, so we'd be out there in the sun, poor actors and wranglers just roasting away, serving food, and that's how location meals were served in the 40s and 50s, and basically, they were homemade food. My mother served gourmet food. She got paid a pretty good amount of money by the studios, and we showed up with lots of goodies, and our role was to make those actors and crew and everybody happy and healthy and wonderful. Well, it's not what goes on now, and we're going to let Ashley and our guests discuss what goes on the sets now. And if Patrick hasn't joined us, Ashley, perhaps you can tell us about what happened.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do believe that we do have our special guest on the line. Manny, would you like to do the introductions?
Yeah, I'd love to. Our guest today is Patrick Kilpatrick. He's an American actor with more than 100 film and TV roles to his credit. He's best known for playing villains opposite such stars as Jean-Claude Van Damme, Bruce Willis, and Steven Seagal. He's also appeared in films along with Chow Yun-fat, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Governor of California, James Caan, Sean Connery, and Mark Harmon. Among his films are A Death Warrant, Last Man Standing, Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, The Replacement Killers, one I love, The Presidio, The Eraser, and Minority Report. But not only that, Patrick's found time to appear in TV shows such as Lois and Clark, Walker, Texas Ranger, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, The X-Files, CSI, Terminator, 24, and Chuck. So he's done everything from comedy, light comedy, to villains, to bad guys, but including in all that, Patrick has also played leads in everything from American Playhouse, even did the film debut in Nicholas Rhodes' Insignificance.
On and off Broadway.
On and off Broadway. He starred in Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra in Los Angeles, where he was directed by Tony Richardson, the Academy Award winner, who's the father of the Redgrave sisters, or I should say, and the grandfather, the father, Charlie Miranda Richardson, who is married to Michael Redgrave's daughter. He's an accomplished writer and journalist, but in spite of all of his acting credits, he's really best known around Hollywood for his charitable work, including hosting the City Hope's benefit, the Hollywood Celebrity Sports Clays Invitational, where he raised money for the City Hope's mobile bone marrow testing unit, a wonderful, wonderful charity, and Patrick did a marvelous job of raising money to assist people to get in line and join the list for bone marrow transplants. Through his efforts, he's helped raise millions of dollars for the Stars and Stripes Foundation, which helps injured American veterans returning from war zones. And he also raised money for Coalition to Salute America's Heroes, a true patriot, Patrick. He's also championed many charities, raising money for juvenile diabetes, improving literacy, and feeding children. His devotion to public service is really legendary in Hollywood. But to his friends, Patrick is the opposite of his screen villains. He's the same nice guy raised on a Virginia farm that brings family values to every project he undertakes. He's extraordinarily bright, which we'll see very shortly in the interview, and he basically spent most of his childhood raised in New England, even though he's a Virginia boy at heart. Patrick, I know this is a short version of your career, but welcome to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much. I think I should be able to walk on water after that.
Well, you have an amazing heart, and that's the thing that's really a treasure with you. And we're very excited about you being here today to talk to the listeners.
Yeah, we want to get into a little bit of what goes on in the sets and then your charities.
Patrick,
say that again.
Patrick, this is Simon. I just want to say a very quick thank you for taking time out to talk to us this week. And what I want to know is, how does a really nice guy like you know someone like Manny Barling?
I was pursued by his lady friend, Ashley.
As I said,
you know, like,
in my,
like a
my
good female companion, she softens the presence of the male in the relationship.
Thank you, Patrick.
Spoken now, like a true actor.
Well, often that is true. You'd have to say in a good female and male relationship, you usually the female does have some softening. Of course, there are notable exceptions sometimes, but that is kind of a women sometimes shape men,
I agree.
And vice versa. It should be vice versa too.
You know that,
Patrick. I'm sure that you know, some of our listeners are right about now going, okay, this is a you know, a health and nutrition program,
right? Yeah.
What are we doing with a famous actor on the program? But as I understand it, you are very health conscious about the food you eat.
Wait.
As I had said early on when I spoke to Patrick, anybody who has seen him, looked at his work, looked at him, he is the poster boy for healthy food. And this is a long year, many years of organic foods. You grew up on it. You spent 45 years on eating organics. And I think you are a walking poster boy for the organic health market.
Well, thank you. I can only say that it's been a mainstay of being allowing me to get through the rigors of not only film, but business and the other activities. I don't think anyone has to give up anything in either elegance or taste or flavor or sustenance of any kind in order to do that. I was very, very fortunate to grow up on a farm in New England, and even though we didn't call it organic, the animals were very, very well cared for, and the food, and my mother was very devoted to extraordinary, I guess you would call it American-based food, but it was... You know, I think when you're raised on that, your palate, you go out into the world and you see some of the other stuff that's going on there. And you might sample it a little bit, but if it's not really nutritious and if it's not really organic-based, to me, it really doesn't taste the way it's supposed to. So I was given a good foundation. That and athleticism have pulled me through a lot of things that... I sometimes think one of my greatest accomplishments, getting through 120 plus films or whatever it is, the number is not becoming a drug addict, an alcoholic, a maniac, some of the things that fall prey to people who don't have really good habits, because the challenges of life, if you don't have those foundations, can become that much more difficult. So... My mother's food tasted great, and so even when I worked at Time Inc., you know, we live in a capitalist society, and I say that with affection. What we buy is really vitally important to the body politic and the cultural environment. So I also drive a Prius. Now, I also own firearms, so, you know, I'm an advocate of the Second Amendment, as well as I don't see any disparity between being that and also being devoted to organic food and nutrition and health. We're all sort of warriors in life, as it were, and we need to have the foundations to carry us through in the rigors that we employ. Now, there have been times where organic food seems more expensive, but if you really look at the research, the costs of eating non-organic food and non-nutritional food are staggering, not only to the country at large and the topsoil of the nation, but the environmental and agricultural insurances that we pay for workers who are exposed to pesticides. And so it really becomes, for me, a public service as well as an individual sustaining action to be purchasing those kind of things, whether you're doing it from local farmers markets or whether you're doing it from Whole Foods or wherever you're going. It's been a pillar of my life, and I know, you know, if you fight Jean-Claude Van Damme, even in the manner of moviedom, 18 hours a day, you better know how to put yourself together and heal yourself. In the same way, chiropractic and massage are really secret weapons of mine. You know, your audience probably is made up of a lot of parents and people, actors who have side jobs and those kind of things. If you, those things provide tensities to your life and things that will cause you to sort of go off the rails. When you have to go in and act, you have to smooth all of that out of your system, either by meditation or by massage or those kind of things, so that the work remains pristine. So, you know, you have to keep yourself in the finest shape you possibly can. And it's not simply vanity. It's just that we only have one body. We only have one voice. We only have one mind. And if those are diminished, there have been some notable cases where people have had terrible things diminishing them and have come up with extraordinary acting. But you don't necessarily want to have to invent a system of acting or get yourself cast simply because you're deranged or you're terribly unhealthy. That does happen, but it's not the road that I want to do. Well, I mean, if you think of Montgomery Clift, he was in a terrible car accident, so he literally evolved a style of acting that involved just his hands because his face no longer worked. And look at dear John Candy, who was a genius. I mean, I don't think I've ever been more saddened by the passing of an actor than when John Candy died. But it was because of his health issues that he died. And I think I knew a long time that I was going to need a long time to do what I wanted to do in life. So I've tried to pull it back, you know, and be as nutritious and nutrition orientated and physically orientated as I possibly could.
Yeah, I think you've done a marvelous job, and it really helps explain why so many actors work as hard as they do. I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan, frankly, but I admire and respect the effort that he puts into everything he does. He works as hard as anyone I've ever seen. And
he does, and I know that from personal experience of working with him.
Yeah.
He does his own stunts as much as they will allow him to, and he's immensely enthusiastic when it comes to action sequences and his work. I found him to be a very gracious guy. You know, the Scientology things aside, I think he's an extraordinary worker, and that's why he remains where he is.
I agree, and his and he doesn't get enough credit for that. And I think that's true with a great many actors. In the age of where people's popularity seem to trump their skills sometimes, people forget the efforts that they take to be what they are. Instead, they're criticized for being vain or some other activity, which isn't fair to them.
Yeah, because they need the energy level with the health, and that does go along with the organic.
Well, let's go on to another aspect of it. Patrick, why don't you describe for people a long, difficult day in the set? I don't think the average listener knows how much time you put on a set, and they think you just sit around all day with nothing to do, work for 5 minutes, and go home. But that's not the case, is it?
No, depending on the specific role that you have, you're preparing for the next scene. What most people don't realize is the competitive process to get you on the scene is often very, very rigorous in itself. Because you remember, people have families, and they have all the other things that you have to balance. And in my case, I do. I have two sons, and I, although I'm divorced currently from for about 10 years, I had a very active marriage, and I also have a business, a film production and development and script writing business, and product integration in films and everything. So you're not only challenged by your time in doing that, as I am with Uncommon Dialogue Films, but then you're challenged by the competitive process to get you onto the set. So once you get there, and that happens very quickly in the case of television, it happens a day or two before you hit the set, and sometimes less time. And you get the, let's say, you get the material. Are you still with me? Because my
oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I teach acting at universities and for individuals sometimes. It's currently on hold, except at universities because of my schedule. But you get the material sometimes at 10 o'clock at night, and by 10 o'clock the next morning, you have to be Quasimodo or you have to be performance ready the next morning. So that's a skill that takes time and is exhausting in itself. So by the time you get to the set, you're already challenged. So you're, in my case, my office goes literally right into the set. So you are, because you have ongoing projects that you're developing, there's writing that has to be done, things that have to be going on. But you're picking up a script, in some cases, that is ongoing. And you literally, in the first week of, say, a movie, have to learn the whole script and your whole part very, very rapidly because of shifts in schedules, you don't know which scene is going to be shot. If you're shooting on the water, it's doubly hard because they're matching the light of the water and the color of the sea at the same time, those kind of things. Say, like in Free Willy or something like that. That's immensely challenging because you never know what scene throughout the script that you're going to be. So you get very adept at being very fast at it. But by the end of a day like that, where you're virtually learning, you know, I mean, sometimes you're given new scenes that are have been written. And, you know, the truth of it is life and acting, or whether it's boxing or Olympic sports or whatever, sometimes you're presented with what looks like virtually insurmountable circumstances. It's not going ashore at Okinawa, or it's not fighting in the mountains of Afghanistan, which always gives me strength when I think I'm going through a difficult time in life. But there are times when you are given things that virtually look, whether it's in the audition process or the actual set, that look insurmountable. But if you go forth with good faith and you work hard, something happens, the sort of artistry of the crucible causes it to work. I've gotten auditions that it's impossible. There's no way you're going to learn 5 pages of monologue for 4 hours later. Or they've dropped, in my case, since I've do a lot of dialects, they'll drop, and you're doing Russian, they'll drop 5 new pages on you at 11 o'clock in the morning, and at 2 o'clock, you've got to do those 5 pages. So you not only have to get the lines down, but you have to break down how you break down a dialect, as you break down phonetically what's going on, and you have to go out and do the Russian, which is separate and apart from what you've already worked on with a dialect coach really rigorously to get the existing script. So there are a lot of things that come up. You have the physical things that come from the fights. You know, people with the compression of budgets, what we used to take, when I fought Jean-Claude Van Damme in Death Warrant, we did about two and a half weeks on the fights. It's pretty intense, and that was about 18 hours a day. As budgets had become more and more compressed, that situation becomes, I did a movie with Billy Blanks, that became one day of work, one day for the fights of an entire movie. So that is immensely challenging, physically and emotionally, because you're basically doing an intense dance for that length of time. So everything in film and television, people don't realize when somebody gets a lead in a television, they have no life forever until that thing is over. They have no life. And I'm, in the case of me, largely guest starring on things. You have the rigors of the show, and often the guest stars are the people that come in, and then they go to the lead actors, okay, you can take a break because now we've got a new person coming in and they're going to dominate this show. But we also had to compete in that show. I mean, in 1 year, I once did 27 guest star things on television and 5 independent films and 4 or 5 studio films. About halfway through, I realized I may not be getting Bruce Willis money, but there is no greater repertory experience in the American theater or film world. You know,
incredible what you've done.
You know, it's funny. Michael Caine once told me a story about his salad days where he was shooting films during the day, including Alfie, and at night doing a show in the West End. So he would sometimes run from the set late with someone helping with his makeup and his car to get on stage on time, and had to go from one set of lines to another set of lines. And he described it as one of the most difficult things he'd ever done.
And it's also why his instrument's so brilliant.
Yes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Stage alone is extremely, I mean, from the moment you wake up in the morning, your mind is ahead thinking to that performance. And you go to the theater. In my case, I would go to the theater every single day, every single performance, and walk through and mouth and say the lines of the entire performance. If you don't do that, then you're searching for seconds, fractions of seconds, for the lines while you're in the performance. You have to front load that stuff into your neural synapse, if you will. And that's happening with every scene that you're doing in a movie. When I teach acting, the guys, and often you have to do that out loud. You know, as I go in the door for an audition, I've just finished running the lines again. And if I stop and talk to a friend in the lobby for 30 seconds, I have to go back out and run those lines again because they will not be there right where you need them to be.
So. You know, I have a rule in this house. When we got married, I told Ashley, who gets as deep into the roles as anyone I know, that she could not ever take the role of Lizzie Borden on stage.
That was my house rule. And I did a few Lizzie Bordens. And he's still alive.
Well, what you don't know is she's having those thoughts on a regular basis, whether she's actually gotten the chance to.
Oh, yes, I did.
Patrick, you know, you talk about 18-hour days on the set, and basically that breaks down to not very much sleep. How on earth can you maintain a healthy lifestyle? You know, I've heard stories about the food that's available on movie sets, and it kind of gives me a queasy tummy.
Well, that's the worst thing, as a producer myself, it's the worst thing you can do. When we do something, we serve, and I had some great examples out of Vancouver where I did a great deal of work. There's a company called Edible Planet, and it was elegant, and it was brilliant in food, and I have actually come from life in America and been restored by the ladies who run Edible Planet. And when you work on a Tom Cruise movie, they use a catering company called Four Star, and so does Steven Spielberg and Four Star Catering, and it is brilliant food. There, the challenge sometimes becomes to not gain too much weight during the run of the show, because you're talking about the finest food that you can possibly eat. On low-budget films, you do run into these things, but I would take my own food if you run into those things, because you're not serving yourself by, you know, if a producer is trying to bring in pizza to serve, first of all, that's demoralizing for a crew. And long term, depending on how much they love the production and how much they love the director, and producer, you can probably get away with that a little. But it's actually the same thing with an army. The worst thing you want to do is not feed people, because that's really the soul of what's going on. That goes for me in our productions, even down to the craft service stuff. We really do put an emphasis, or our events, say at the Hollywood Celebrity Sporting Clays Invitational, which I host and organize. By the way, our next event will be June 11th, excuse me, at trip at Oak Tree Gun Club, which is an exquisite place. And the name of this year's event is the Hollywood Celebrity Three-Ring Spring Fling Fashion Tactical Eco Circus with Tombstone Apocalyptic Organic Sporting Clays Tournament. But
well, I hope everybody has got that written down.
No, yeah, well, you don't have to, because you can shift the words around a lot and it still makes no sense or is enthralling depending on who you talk to. But that's exactly what we build for these events, which is a three-ring circus around outdoor sports and tactical things. It is a lot of fun, and it's everything from, we're very dedicated to getting young people into outdoor sports and women into outdoor sports and bringing more A-list celebrities into that to provide positive imagery for all of that. This year, right now we're going to be identifying the charity, but City of Hope will be involved with us again. And there's a group called Guide On that serves the children of men and women who've been killed in action in Afghanistan and Iraq and the Philippines and the other places where we are. The question was, first of all, let me address most people in your audience.
Wait a minute, Patrick, before we go any farther, we have a good many listeners and friends of Ashley's of mine in Los Angeles, so let everybody know exactly where the club is in Los Angeles, which hopefully will help improve attendance. So
okay.
If you could give us a little more information, it'll help people.
Yeah, it's at Oak Tree Gun Club, which is a really beautiful, perhaps the finest shooting club in Los Angeles. It's at the juncture of the 405 and the 5, right in Newhall, California. It's easily on the internet, can be easily found. We'll be posting things. We literally just got that venue two nights ago, and tomorrow I walk with my staff through the facility. It's 6,500 acres of rolling canyon hills, so people will actually be shooting archery and sporting clays, which is where clay pigeons are launched from a variety of angles and speeds over the canyons. By the way, we use biodegradable clay pigeons from a company called White Flyer, and we're very active in the pursuit and the realization of biodegradable ammunition. So there's a company called Dynamic Research that is at the forefront of that, and we use all of that. So California has some very rigorous laws about no lead and those kind of things. Safety is paramount on what we do. We will have casting contests across the canyon and archery things across the canyon. And the barbecue will be organic and five-star and all of that. So it's at Oak Tree Gun Club in Newhall, California. And if you just go www.oaktreegunclub, you'll be able to get to all of that. June 11th is when that event is.
And Patrick, maybe you can come on again right before it, just even for 5 minutes to announce it again, and we can put it out to people so you can get that advertised again around the time period.
Well, that's very gracious of you, and I'd be happy to do that. I'm very gratified by my celebrity friends who do a lot of that for us before the event and do the circuit, not only locally but nationally and internationally, to promote the event. So people like Joe Montagna and Eric Roberts by the way, I want to mention, you talked about physical discipline. Eric Roberts, despite the fact that he is on celebrity rehab this season, which is actually a reality show for me that actually has some true emotional power, which is the hallmark of all art. But Eric is one of those guys who every single job would arrive in absolute the epitome of physical shape. I mean, there is no one more disciplined than that. It appears that he had an issue with pharmacology after the movies were over and those kind of things. It brings up Heath Ledger. I mean, you have to take the time to come down from these incredibly difficult roles. I believe and theorize that Heath Ledger was so exhausted from doing the Joker that And there again, the good habits come into play there. If you're drinking coffee and you're smoking cigarettes, and then obviously the vitamins are being stripped out of your body, and you're going to go into what I call the negative quadrant of life, and then you're going to be depressed, and then you're into depression, and you're not sleeping well, and you're not doing all of those other things. So if he had perhaps gone to the Caribbean and just chilled and ate really wonderful food for a month, instead of going clubbing in New York, he would still be with us. There's so many actors in the history of Hollywood who've gotten into issues like that because they didn't have what I had, which was this foundation of really good food and athleticism that my parents gave me. It really comes down to parents. Anyway, just wanted to say that. You mentioned people not getting enough sleep. People don't realize that many, many production people have died in car accidents as falling asleep coming home from shoots.
Yes, they have.
I can't tell you how many times I've fallen asleep in my garage because I didn't have the wherewithal to get out of the car.
As you know, this is something that Steven Spielberg has championed. There's a legendary story about someone who lived in our neighborhood in San Fernando Valley coming home from a location at 3 a.m. in Long Beach, went off the Ventura Freeway and died one night, and it just caused an uproar about late hours, particularly on low-budget films and even big-budget films that are going well into the night because they've got to finish a scene for some budgetary reason, and it's a huge problem.
Yeah, it's crazy, and as the budget, as the economy has shrunken, it's gotten much more intense.
You know, you were talking about doing that one movie in one day. I mean, Andy could tell you about how I had rehearsal was about 2 weeks on a film, and we shot the entire film. I was the lead and shot the whole film in two days.
Well, yeah, exactly.
The entire film was shot in 2 days.
Well, unfortunately, that's one of the business models that works. Now you're into the business models that function in the world of film finance right now. And right now you have two models that works. One are the studio films, and then there's reality films, reality television shows, and then there's people... God thank the Lord, we live in a time where people can pick up the technology and make films, but your budgets are incredible. I mean, if a film my company would have once budgeted at $80 million, we have to film for $15 million now. So, and it's monumentally, it's heroic, really.
Absolutely.
Our event, the Hollywood Celebrity Sporting Clays Invitational, we have to produce a three-ring circus for $25,000, $30,000. Now, in those cases, we get immense donations from manufacturers and those things. But to get those people to do those things my assistant Marina and I were doing 20-hour days for 2.5 weeks before that, and 18-hour days for 3 months before, 3.5 months before that. So, yeah, I lost 17 pounds doing the last Hollywood Celebrity Sporting Clays Invitation. If I didn't have healthy habits, by the way, I gave up coffee because of that process completely, because if coffee squeezes your adrenaline system, and that's a great pleasure once in a while. But if you do that on a daily basis, like all things in the universe, what you're taking up, you're going to drop down. And in the end, it's not productive. So you really have to preserve. And by the way, everybody on the planet is getting older, are we not?
Unfortunately. The guys are.
No.
The girls never do.
Actresses never get older. You should know that.
I just look really bad for my age.
I'm
20,
actually,
right? Pardon?
Well, that brings up a thing. I think actresses in particular, I think, are obsessed with remaining thin and those kind of things. And I think they should back off on that a little bit.
Well, I have.
You know.
some of that is the intense industry pressure and the things that people particularly, basically casting people say to actresses, I find just horrible. You know, oddly enough, I want to come back to the gun club. When I was a kid, sure, that's where we all learned how to shoot, and I learned to shoot a rifle up that canyon. And you're right, it's a wonderful joy. There's a sense of safety. When you're learning how to shoot, it makes you feel like you're really in the great outdoors, and it's really very, very special. And for those people who are able to go, they'll find that one of the most unique experiences they will ever have.
Yeah, if you just go to the new website is just going up. I want to thank you for saying that, because really that's the point. The point is that responsible use of a firearm and archery and fly fishing and those skills, the great glory of acting and producing and writing, is that you're constantly learning new skills, and the educational process is lifelong. Whether it's skiing or shooting a rifle, you want to learn those things well. And I grew up as you did, and firearm safety was very paramount. We have a novice section of our event where people who've never fired a gun can come out and be taught by world champion instructors. In the case of inner city kids, it is vital that they learn the notion of responsible gun ownership. It's paramount to our Second Amendment rights and our system of government. And like martial arts, there are few at-risk kids who learn the skills of martial arts or firearm from really dedicated, wonderful people that run into trouble. It moves them in a direction that is instrumental for our democracy, I think, and instrumental for us creating children, just as the food that we feed them is creating children who can carry our democracy and our system of values forth into the 21st century. And for us, that involves the eco as well. So, I urge people to come out, and I know they'll have a time like they've never had in Hollywood, because I have a lot of experience with gifting suites and things. So we really put on a good show and give away fly fishing castings and pistol trainings and rifle trainings and archery trainings. Tim Case runs our archery area, and he's from Pennsylvania, and he's does it for Edinburgh University in Pennsylvania, and he's wonderful with the targets. Our list of sponsors is a tremendous group of people. And I'm sure I'll get sleepy on the way home.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Knowing that drive, definitely. Yeah, I think that is wonderful. And I had the pleasure of studying martial arts for a while with Bruce Lee during his starving days in the 60s when he moved here from Washington. And it was kind of a cliquey crowd of people who lived in the Valley, and a lot of them were in the industry. And James Coburn joined us for a long time. And it was an interesting group because it was more mental, as you point out, than it was physical. And in the end, we learned more about ourselves than we did many other things. And you're absolutely right. If the youth of today took those types of courses and understood the state of mind it takes to perform in martial arts, which is a state of mind that has more to do with respecting yourself and everyone around you, then there would be far less violence in this world. Martial arts is not a tool of anger. It's a tool of intellectual growth and learning that sits right next to Buddhism.
Well, Simon, I think you should become a member of the press team. You all should become members of the press team that we come and put out on the course for these things. And well spoken, and it goes back to your countrymen, in my mind, at least to King Arthur, that might is for right and the defense of the helpless. This is why we teach it, and it stretches through the American Revolution and out into the I call it the arena of democracy in our world, which is tremendously under assault most of the time. So
I absolutely agree with you. At age 10 or 11, I was definitely the weakling. I won't say that I was bullied, but I didn't much enjoy it. So I actually took up judo, almost made it to the British junior team national team. Suddenly I gained a lot of respect, and it wasn't because I smacked people around on the street. I absolutely didn't. You know, I learned that, that there are ways to deal with situations.
Yeah, and people don't realize that 85% of all conservation dollars on the planet come from hunters' and fishermen's licensing fees. I attend PETA events as well because I think there's a place for that. No non-psychotic person would not be against the abuses that are perpetrated in factory farms, and that's one reason to go in and buy organic meat. Whole Foods has a 5-point animal welfare program, which they've just instituted for their chickens and their beef. The plain fact is, unless you're a strict vegan, something is going to die in order to do that. And if you are out in the field and you know those things and you know the process of life, then you are going to become a conservationist. I take a great deal of inspiration from Teddy Roosevelt, who, despite the fact was a big game hunter, he was perhaps the greatest conservationist that this country has ever known. And by the way, I urge your audience to go to Glacier National Park sometime.
Oh,
everyone knows, you know, they know Yellowstone Park, but people don't even know that Glacier National Park, it sounds like you've been there. It's so beautiful as to be artificial looking. I mean, the lakes look like Gatorade.
Oh my gosh, how fabulous.
It is. It's unbelievable.
It's exquisite. They have one road that goes through it called the Road to the Sun. It's largely a wilderness park, and I took my 14-year-old for the month of June last year and fly fished from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, up to through Glacier National Park. And really, it's the soul of our nation on a certain level, one of them, you know. And that needs to be preserved, and that's preserved mightily by some of the what appear to be disparate things that we try to bring together with our events and our lives, which are preservation and conservation of the environment, as well as being the kind of people who can govern well and who can make informed decisions. How can you, if your brain is muddled by the madness, there are many, many people who are ill who still are wise and kind and loving people. But their lives are going to be immensely easier. Just as it's difficult to act when you're in pain, it's very, very difficult if your bodies are and your spirit are diminished by not putting the right things in your system. And nobody's saying don't go to McDonald's once in a while or whatever.
Oh, I am. Wait a minute. What's
so
I know the ingredients?
I haven't been to McDonald's for a long, long time, but children, this gets into the how children are instructed. I mean, my children, you know, were raised on organic food, but they were also, you know, if you want to go there, let's talk about that, talk about what's going on there. And so pretty soon they're going to their friends' houses and they're asking for a carrot rather than, you know, everybody loves chocolate. Why not buy organic chocolate? If we live in a time when you and I don't know your ages, but when I started in New York, you had Korean grocers, and maybe you had one health food store down there. It was more difficult. Now, if you like Cheetos, you can get organic Cheetos. If you like chips, there are organic chips. They're going to be better for you than the ones that are served up, and they're also better for the planet.
No question. I have Crohn's disease, and I can tell the difference between the two automatically. One makes me immediately ill, and the organic one I can eat and walk away and lead a normal life. And for those of us who have some form of hereditary illness like this, it's a huge difference, believe me.
Yeah.
So you know, there are two groups of people in my mind right now in this world. Those who feel the food they eat, you know, people like me who have health issues, and those people like you who just want to cut out the dangers of the future. So for us, the effect is immediate. For you, you're looking at a long term. So a lot of our listeners who have health problems find immediate benefits, and the other ones have to listen to people like you who talk about how it's affected your life in the long term, because so many people Ashley and I talk to about these health issues don't view their life on the long term, over the long term, and that's
a
problem.
And I think the biggest part is the fact that it's a silent inflammation. And many doctors talk about how there is a silent inflammation that then leads to other illnesses that result in cancer and arthritis and the various illnesses. So if somebody doesn't have immediate reaction, they think they're okay. And then all of a sudden, and it's not all of a sudden because it's a buildup of inflammation from eating the wrong foods, that they suddenly become very ill. Even though it's not sudden, it just the symptoms are suddenly there. Then
absolutely.
It can be cancer or,
yeah.
You know.
Well, people don't realize, they look at big strapping Patrick and they go, wow, he's got the world knocked. But the reality of it was I was born allergic to almost everything.
I thought you were allergic to cats.
I'm allergic to cats still, and allergic, love animals, and but allergic to cats, dogs to a lesser extent. I'm a competitive rider, and you mentioned Wranglers in your opening story. My parents believed that horseback riding was an upwardly mobile activity, and in Connecticut and Virginia, it certainly is.
Absolutely.
In large measure. So I was given horses from the age of 9 to ride, and they took ex-race horses and turned them into jumpers and hunters. But I was sick all the time of it. When I was younger, I would develop an immunity to it over. But I've always had asthma that I had to deal with. And also, I broke my back in a car accident and almost never walked again when I was 17. So to go through all those movie things after that, it was actually a great blessing. And this taught me something, to actually break my back in the car accident, because it forced me even deeper into the restorative exercises and the restorative foods and things like that, because I had enough on my plate with that and asthma that I could not deal with any other bad habits. So I drove into it with that. And so no matter what your audience's health challenges are, by going into these things, they're going to find immediate relief from it. If I, in my life, if I've gained a little weight, I can play the redneck sheriff sometimes. And it's interesting how the universe takes you into the set of circumstances that is appropriate for what you're supposed to be doing if you're on the right path. And I believe everybody has a path and a purpose in life. So, but the immediate effects of just losing a little bit of weight are monumental, and that can be helped by all of the organics and the eating the proper foods. There are many, many. I'm a hunter and a meat eater, but there are massive amounts of Americans who need to eat less meat and who need to lose enormous amounts of weight. So. So it's all things in balance and all things brought into, you know, you mentioned people don't think long terms. One of the biggest problems, I think, is that people don't have high aesthetics and they don't have high aspirations. There's no child in America, provided that's God's will for them, who cannot become president of the United States. The reason Clinton became president of the United States is he identified that aspiration early on in his life. If you identify your aspirations and you draw to yourself those tools that you need, kind of like in my life, I identified I wanted to be a writer, so I became a writer. Then I identified that I wanted to be an actor, and I became an actor. And then I realized that God or the universe plan was for me to be a producer, and I had the skill set, and so I became that. So if you identify your aspirations and you do those things that move you in that path, Teddy Roosevelt said, proceed confidently and you will succeed beyond your wildest imaginings. And it's true. So if your audience identifies that they want to live in health and they want to live in excellence, they can. They just need to move in that direction.
And one of the things that happens when somebody does have health and they eat the proper foods, then it affects the mind, the chemistry within the mind, which helps them to go forward with their goals. So I always talk about what's forgotten in medicine is mind, body, and spirit. Those three things have to work together. And the only way it works together is if you start with your thoughts, but you also start with what you put in your mouth. And everything that goes into you is going to have a long-term effect on your life and your dreams.
Exactly. And on your country, because you had to buy it.
Yeah.
And so you're abdicating your vote of the dollar by buying things that are supporting, if not the bad guys, the guys with the lower aesthetics.
Or the guys who are simply in there for profit, and whether you call them bad guys or not, because in our country that's seeking profits, not necessarily being a bad guy. But when you compromise what you do for the with the people around you and you do it at their expense, then I challenge that somewhat.
I mean, we call it malignant narcissism because there is no cure for it, and the only care that person has, like the people who are putting genetically engineered food into our food source that's making people very sick and without them knowing it, and for that, they're malignant narcissists because they're just about profit. They don't care about the person.
I think there is an accounting in the universe for people who knowingly do something that is inappropriate and at the expense of others. Now, leadership, whether on the battlefield or in the body politic, does require really hard choices. But we often have this notion of business can't be ecological. You all know, and we're preaching to the converted among us, I think, but I know that my business runs the best when it's run sustainably and it's run in a manner that doesn't diminish the planet. Just as when I serve an investor in our film company, it doesn't serve anyone to do the short term and not return that investor's money and their interest and their profit as rapidly as possible. It's very challenging, but the alternative is self-defeating, because you will end up with a universe not of making people money, but of a universe of having diminished your investment pool. I mean, Wall Street operates in large measure on the investor. If he loses his money, then he is a sucker, and it was right for the taking. That isn't the way that business should function. Business should function so that it is a sacred trust that you are given money by another person, and you have an abject, complete, and utter responsibility. When I lecture film people and raising, do you know how many times I run into someone who was kind and was interested in the film business and wanted to invest, and yet the money was given to somebody who either well-meaningly didn't know the business model from beginning to global distribution. And that is ever evolving, just as health is ever evolving. What worked yesterday doesn't work today and won't work 5 years from now. So that sacred trust has been violated. I tell my students, you don't ask for money from anyone unless you know the road to their getting it back and the road for them to make their profit and their interest. You just don't do that. Unless you
Patrick.
Would put your...
Patrick, I want to just wind this back a couple of minutes. There was something that you said that really piqued my interest, and it's in some ways an unfair question, and that's why I'm pointing it at you rather than Manny or Ashley, because I know their answer to it. You mentioned, you know, the propensity for obesity in today's society. In your opinion, what is the cause?
Well, the cause is you don't want to interfere with individual freedom, but Ashley mentioned it. The vast majority of people on a cellular level are addicted to what they're eating. Now, like any addiction, it has to be overcome by the introduction and supplanting of that addiction with something that is sustaining and better. The people who are eating fast food and improper food are addicted. Their cells are screaming for that addiction to be maintained, just as the federal government is screaming for the debt limit to be raised and the spending to continually be utilized. They are addicted to this situation, just as California is addicted to the way that they're conducting their government. It takes courage, and it takes sustenance, and it takes, in my belief system, prayer and God's guidance to overcome that addiction. In the case of large portions of our populace, you have cultural factors that are playing into fact. You have a reduction of athleticism in schools because of video games and a lot of things. So you have this sort of perfect storm of things that have come together to make high school students today really not look like the human beings that went to high school when I was. There's always going to be a certain class of them and a group of them that are going to pass through that, largely because of parental guidance and also athleticism. So, again, the things that we do at our event are pivotal to that. But there are addictions to systems and addictions to ways of eating and ways of governing that are not functional, and they need to be not only arrested but reversed. So I say on the food level, if you like sugar, go get some organic honey. If you like Cheetos, go get the organic brand. At least make that transition. Walk through a health food store. Become familiar with the vast variety of elegant and wonderful foods that are there. Go to your local farmers markets and insist on the certified organic things. Now, the certification program is expensive and challenging for some farmers, but make sure that you're talking to a real farmer whose food is organic, and maybe he's just on the brink of getting the certification. If it's coming from a foreign country where there are no governing bodies for that kind of thing, avoid it. Buy it from local suppliers, and if you want to, take your family out for an excursion to those farms and see how things are done. Don't be disconnected from the problem. Go out and go trout fishing and be connected to the environment. Go out and go hunting and follow that process. Don't be disconnected from the process that something died and needs to be revered for having provided that to you. Get active about it.
I used to always take a moment before every meal, and I stopped, and you just reminded me that I need to go back to do that, that the Indians always said thank you for whatever they ate before they ate it, to say thank you for giving up that life so I can sustain mine. And it's a prayer that I think if people went back to, they actually, in that moment, you stop to think about what you're about to eat. You're thanking it, you're giving it a blessing, and you're thinking about what's going into your body before you eat it, which means you're not just half-heartedly or your mind takes over and you're just, you know, with that addiction problem of just throwing it in your mouth because that's what you're used to doing. And once you start eating it, you can't stop eating because it's full of MSG, and that whole process starts. I think that simple little flick of a moment of thanking that thing for giving its life for you. You know?
You're absolutely right. And the act of prayer before a meal has a time-honored purpose. It slows you down. You will take a breath. It never happens. In my life, I've never prayed and not gotten 5 minutes out of the confusion that I was living in. Whether that's a psychological trick or whether you want to believe that's the universe aligning with you or whether you want to put it in traditional jargon of calling it God, it still works. If you're confused, if you say, being Protestant, I can just say, please God, show me the way, and it shows me the way. But you have to become unaddicted. The plain fact is, it's for some of our populace, it doesn't even taste good. Organic food doesn't taste good. A glorious organic apple, which does in fact taste much richer and more wonderful than the inorganic version, to them, because they're addicted to the other thing, doesn't taste as good. It tastes
let's go a step farther. We have a generation who may never have tasted these foods. I always joke, people say, well, what kind of diet are you selling? What is this? And I always say, well, we're suggesting people go back to what our grandparents fed us.
Sure.
And the basis of our diet is our grandparents ate properly. They knew what to eat. In our generation, I'm just a couple years older than you, there were no overweight people in our classes, maybe one here or there. But the weight was not a real issue because people just basically ate the proper foods and they exercised a lot. And they didn't know they were exercising a lot. We just all walked to school and did all those things that kids our age did. Now, the change of the buses, the urban system, the changes in the school, some of these children, particularly minorities and people in the inner cities, don't have that opportunity to have tasted the food that you and I grew up on. So we knew the difference. And some of these people don't.
Okay.
Well,
I was just
going to say, it's very much like actors. Nowadays, I forget what the number is. It's something, used to be like 7,000 people came to Hollywood every month to try and become actors. If we don't identify excellence, as you're saying, excellence of food, that now the norm has become this other benchmark. They don't even know what the excellent food is. Nowadays, there are whole classes of actors who don't even know about Olivier or Sir John Gielgud or even De Niro or Sean Penn. They believe that Tori Spelling is an actress.
Oh my God, so, are you kidding me?
they believe that hosting is an actor. That being on a reality show or that Kim Kardashian is what should be aspired to. Rather than the Cate Blanchetts, rather than these the real benchmarks of what is true art. And so it's important to continually be inserting what is excellence back into that realm. So
I agree. I've had a running discussion with Sir Roger Moore, a longtime friend of Ashley's and mine, on this particular topic. And he and I agree that, because he, believe it or not, came to America and worked within the star system and started out in MGM with Clint Eastwood and a variety of other famous actors, going to dance classes every day and doing that old route. And the end result is we had a generation of actors who were far better schooled, much in the tradition of the English theater. And one of the things that I share in common with Simon is my parents were British immigrants. My father worked for J. Arthur Rank in England before he came to the United States. And so I've been raised with more British culture than any single American would have to deal with. But that's another question. But seriously, what we've done in Hollywood is we've taken away the training that were given to previous generations, and what we have is a group of shallow actors. And
but I never saw the analogy until you're saying it to the organic eating and that. It's the same. It's the training.
It's
the education. It's the upbringing. It's the thread that's missing.
The landscape is so altered. It's like the recent tax bill. That is described as a tax bill. It is, in fact, a debt bill. So
right.
The lingo, the language that we use becomes, it defines the culture. So what they did in Washington for that is described as leadership. It's described as compromise. But it's none of those things. It's a recipe for disaster, in my opinion, and I look at it, and I look at it somewhat dispassionately. It's amazing how they use language to describe something that has the absolute opposite effect of what it does. We just added $1 trillion to our debt, and it was called the tax bill. Debt bill.
One of the things we talk about with language, when you said that, it just God, I didn't mean to be rude and cutting you off at all.
No, not at all.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I just jumped in because you pushed my button. And how we talk about how our healthy foods are killing us. Because when you go into the market and you look at the non-organic foods, they are filled with the DNA of that is actually a bacteria that has a pesticide in it. In order to make the DNA grow into a fruit, they had to use a promoter virus, which RNA is identical to leukemia, HIV, and hepatitis. They use this in the fruits and vegetables that people are eating every day. And they're looking at that saying, this is healthy. It goes with what you're saying. It's a language of, this is healthy.
Sure.
No, it's not. That's not healthy that people are going to eat that, and then we're going to wax it and make sure you can't wash anything off, even though it's in the DNA. So,
and by the way, those people eating that, and this is going on. I've gone to certain places in the United States. In fact, the whole Western Hemisphere could be described as America. In the United States, you have people 25, 30 years ago who really did not resemble human beings in the way that we think of them. So I do believe on some level, after a while, the DNA does alter.
And that's what the scientists, that's why it's this, the genetically engineered food that we have in this country that was released in our country in the early 90s without anybody knowing, because the government didn't feel we needed to know, that is banned in Europe, and it's banned because the independent testing of it actually has proven to cross the intestinal barrier and go into people and cause DNA changes. And it's causing DNA changes within the fetus of the babies that women are carrying.
It has to.
I mean, one out of six babies right now are being born with neurological damage. What do you think that's coming from, you know?
Well, I'm sure there are environmental factors, too. I have nothing but, and they're no more expensive than the chemicals that are used in non-organic housing. They've come down on a lot of these things. It's very easily to transform your home into something that has the pesticides and those things. And, by the way, if there's a terrorist attack, you can use the glass cleaner for toothpaste. So it works out that way too. So
and for people into security, do you know the glass cleaner, ammonia-based glass cleaner, is more effective than mace to blind people and to stop them? That's something that isn't known, because I think you did it. Didn't you do a scene in Under Siege? Was it you that tasted the pepper spray or whatever it was and said, I like it? Wasn't that one of your lines?
I'm not sure. You remember the movie better than I do. I largely remember my relationship with Steven Seagal and the glorious fall. You know, it was a real Hollywood moment for me, because I was going through a divorce. I had $50, and I remember I had $50, and my agent called and said, they're hiring you for this job. And 12 hours later, I was in a $2 million condominium, getting paid $10,000 a week, with a cord of wood and a grand piano at the top floor of the Beaver Creek Hotel in Vail, Colorado.
Yeah. What a great story.
Yeah, and it was the fall, and it was the most glorious time of Colorado. So I've had a couple of those Hollywood moments, and you go from nothing to right on the top of the world. And I did die from a knife to the throat, and we just had a wonderful time. So.
That was a bonus, actually.
I'm glad they revived you for us.
Yeah, the wonderful actor Everett McGill, I had betrayed my boss or began to threaten his power, so he took me out with a knife to the throat. But it was a great job and really represented an economic and, you know, those big budget movies, sometimes you have so much downtime sometimes on those that you're actually, like you said with Michael Caine, I've done studio movies, and depending on the size of your part, you do that, and I've done plays, and I've done low budget films in downtime in between those things. And the low budget things were even more fun, because you arrive 5 minutes from, you know, 5 minutes after you're there, you're driving your own car and your own stunts, shooting your weapons out the window, making up your own dialogue in your own dialect. So it can be a great stress reliever from any opportunity to sort of sit around on a big budget film. So
I actually did a TV pilot in Vegas once, and I turned it on, and I found Ashley driving her Mercedes in the film, at which point someone decided to crash the front end. Of course, I knew it was a plastic trash can, but still you kind of go, oops, that's my car.
I forgot to tell him.
Yeah, I don't think I would lend my car to a movie production, although if I was driving it,
believe
I would.
Believe me, I would. If someone had said something, I know better.
you don't want to. I used to rent my apartment all the time in Venice because it was right on the water, so it was a great location for movies, and paid the rent sometimes by renting for that month. You know, your audience should realize that God or the universe is not going to drop you off the map. These are challenging times, and the universe is going to provide, but you need to be giving 120% and doing that wisely so that you're in the best situation that you possibly can to receive the gifts that are going to come. These are challenging times for a lot of people, but it's in those challenging times that we find the resources and the gifts. I don't really believe there are bad events. I just think how we receive it is taken. Yes, a murder is a terrible event, but how someone responds to that murder is what the lesson is.
Indeed.
No question.
And I'll tell you what, I'm looking at the game clock, shall we say, and
yep.
I think it's high time we did a shameless commercial break. I know that Manny and Ashley have a new book that has just hit the stores. Do you want to give us the 30-second pitch?
Sure, I love shameless promotion.
Absolutely, shameless is best.
Our recent book is on the same topics that Patrick's discussing. It's titled "It's Not Your Fault." It's about weight gain, obesity, and food addiction. And in the book, we discuss all the reasons that Patrick's been discussing, why people are gaining weight, how the chemicals sold in our society are endangering them, and we talk about living a chemical-free diet, which includes staying away from BP Deep Horizon Rig disasters, and showing people how this can change your life, how this can change their health, how it saved me from dying, getting out of a wheelchair, and being confined to bed after I was diagnosed with a malignant cancer, and how I got rid of it. So it's a very interesting book. Our other books are Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, and Arthritis, Gout, Inflammation, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS, and they can be found on our website.
And we cover nutrition in it, and we cover enzymes.
And we offer recipes, and it's at howtoeliminatepain.com or mannysdietbook.com. Or for those who just want to get online, they can buy it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and about 39 other booksellers, including in Russia and China. But if you do that, if someone understands our review, because we did get a review in China, please call us and let us know what it says.
Yeah, I keep telling everybody it was a great review, but I can't read it.
Right,
that's review.
Right, Patrick. When in doubt, it's a great
review.
It's
a great review.
That sounds wonderful. And you can do what they say again.
And Patrick, you have talked about your involvement with charities, but are we going to be seeing you on the silver screen or on the TV anytime soon? What projects are you working on?
Well, I never know about the people with other their other people's work because that comes up, as I said, really fast and furiously sometimes. I do have my own production company. I'm getting ready to direct a heist film in the fashion business called Vain Attempt, which is we worked long and hard on that script and that project, and thankfully we work very hard on the business model, so at long last, the investment community is responding to these things, but that takes constant evolution. We have a movie that we are doing, is in the funding stages for in New Mexico called Sundown, and I'm going this week to meet with the governor of Georgia so that we can shoot a film that we're doing called Lady Pirates in Georgia and Louisiana. It'll be my second meeting with him. You know, the construction businesses and the economy of Georgia is not doing well, and I'm hoping that we can talk the powers that be in Georgia to participating in a wise way with film production, which is a sustainable ecological industry. California has been so mismanaged in large measure that most of our work has gone away, or large portions of it have gone away. And if ever there was a clearer example of lack of vision, then that is it. So you have to, again, film financing is so challenging that you have to find every manner of cobbling together that production funding. We just put together a reality show called Green Angels, where we take wounded warriors and they form a team to go and hunt poachers. And people don't realize that wildlife crime and smuggling is the second largest criminal activity on the planet. It is above gun running and below drugs. We're going to take wounded warriors and have them form a team and work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Special Service, to which happened to be the largest jurisdiction of any marshal in American law enforcement. So there again, let me point out, reality shows can be good and can do those a good thing to the environmental and in the entertainment environment. So that's one thing. We've got a lot of stuff going on. There's political work that I'm doing as well, and the event, of course, is very encompassing. So that's taking up the vast majority of time. This week, who knows? I could be guest starring on something or doing a film. I never know with other people because those things come up so quickly. It's not a good time for acting in large measure. For me, I found that the dignity of playing the same white Aryan supremacist in a prison cell was really, you know, if you've done that, and I've done it in spades, then that tapestry has to get larger. I hope to play Blackbeard in Lady Pirates, which...
Oh, my gosh, that would be wonderful.
Well, since I'm the producer, and that's entirely possible. Blackbeard is an interesting villain, to say the least.
He absolutely is. And by the way, when you get back to time with the Gun Project, your charity, let Ash and I know, and we'll be happy to jump in and help in any way we can.
You know, that's very sweet of you, and I will call on you, because these events don't happen without the involvement of an enormous amount of people. We have the presence of our military is there, and we use them from everything from security to busing tables. And I can't tell you how much I went through actually asking Navy SEALs to bus tables, but they leapt in, and they're, you know, that's one thing that's wonderful about the military mind, particularly elite groups. They're like, okay, boss, there's five ways to do this. Which one do you want to do it?
I love that.
And they're just extraordinary, and they are so grateful to be embraced by Hollywood, where they have the perception that Hollywood is somehow against them. And in fact, that's one of the driving reasons why I got into it, was because you have a choice in life. You either can get bitter at the inequities and what appear to be inequities, or you can act. And I was so infuriated by the anti-military and anti-gun and anti-Second Amendment and anti-hunting, fishing misinformation that was being given out here. When I knew I was driving a Prius and I was eating organic food as well as doing these other things, that these things had to be brought into play. And so that's why we, in our own Hollywood way, we create a party for everybody, but we're getting the message across. So I really am grateful that you say that, and we'll figure out something wonderful for you to do so that you know, it's really all about service, life is, in my view. You know, it's how do you serve the movie audience? How do you serve the script? How do you serve the director? How do you serve your investors? How do you serve your sponsors? How do you serve the attendees of the event? How do you serve the venue? How do you, it really comes down to that. So,
and for us, it's how do we serve
Patrick,
people?
I just want to say that I represent bloggernews.net, and I would be happy to help in any way I can. You know, we have about 500,000 readers a month. I really, really want to help you promote this program.
And you put it out in news things too that go out to millions and millions and millions of people.
Yes.
Well, that would be great, and I love that. We are launching a website right now called HollywoodPatriot.org, and I wish you all would do something about the importance of nutrition and all of that for that at some point. So blogger news, will you get me that information? And we
absolutely.
Don't worry, Patrick.
We'll send you everything.
It sounds great. Well, onward and upward, I feel like I've met some new friends, and
there's no such things as new friends. It's old friends that you just haven't met yet.
Exactly.
So are there any websites that you want to plug at all along the way here?
Well, again, if someone wants to learn right now what the last event was like, they can go to HollywoodSportClays.com. HollywoodSportClays.com. Clays is plural. HollywoodSportClays.com. They can even register for the June 11th event, and if they do it on the old website, they get an extraordinary tactical gift as well. So the website for the new event is just going up, and my wonderful art director, Greg Forrest, does an amazing job on the websites. And so February 5th at Spago's Restaurant for luncheon, if anyone wants to come down, we are giving away to the Wounded Warriors their prize money and their gifts. And we have 9 Hollywood celebrities who participated in our event, and we're giving each one of them a gold engraved Ithaca shotgun, courtesy of Ithaca Pump Shotguns, an extraordinary American company that does a wonderful pump shotgun. And we will be at Spago's Restaurant on 12 to 2 on February 5th. And again, HollywoodSportClays.com.
You
can order tickets for the new event on June 11th at Oak Tree Gun Club right there. And shortly, the website will be up for that.
Terrific.
Patrick, it's hard to pass up an opportunity to Wolfie's. And those people who don't live in Los Angeles, Wolfgang's food is as good as it's labeled. It's not what you get in his frozen food section for those people.
He has organic chicken, organic foods right now.
Yeah, he's one of the prime movers in the organic fields, so we will gladly be attend. We will see that.
Well, that sounds great. I want to call attention to the company that did our food at the last one, which is called Fifth Food, and they're highlighted on our website. And they're a young group of people that came out of the Gold's Gym environment, so they're really extraordinary as well, and they have a new shop in West Hollywood, so
terrific.
Where they do all of that. So onward and upward.
Yep.
And
thank
I
you
also
very
want to
much.
Out, oh, thank yeah. you, Patrick. I also want to put out to the listeners that there are still recovering soldiers at Walter Reed. And if you have a moment just to send a card, I'm going to give that address out. It's a recovering American soldier at care of Walter Reed Army Medical Center, 6900 Georgia Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20307-5001. There's a recovering soldier there that would love to get a card from any listener. And let's not forget about these guys.
Can you give that one more time? Because I'm going
to
write it down.
I will send it to you, Patrick. Patrick,
okay.
I'll give it more.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure. It's called A Recovering American Soldier, care of Walter Reed Army Medical Center, 6900 Georgia Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20307-5001. And that would be really be appreciated to that soldier that he's not forgotten.
I think, you know, you bring up such a wonderful thing. People do not realize how being recognized by people like yourself, what that means to a soldier and what that means to a wounded vet. Having visited Brook Army Medical Center in San Antonio, you know, just the fact that someone would take the time to appear there is instrumental in their healing and all of that. There a lot of organizations that are doing quality things, but there's so much work that needs to be done in that realm. And we have a bunch of them working with us at the Hollywood. So Tim Abel, who does Grateful Nation on ESPN, where they take wounded warriors hunting and fishing around the world, and it's instrumental. So your card program is a really wonderful thing.
Yes, you know, I lost too many friends in Vietnam. And mm-hmm. none of us who went through that have ever forgotten that our friends who came home were treated poorly. And most of us in my generation don't want to see that happen again. And it's very important to us that America reach out to these people and give them the support that they need.
Well, they need jobs. They need jobs, too. The people,
I
they need jobs.
I hate to break the party up. I really
yes.
do.
All right.
You know, this is just a delightful discussion. However, my producer is whining in my ear, you know, time's up.
Well, thank you, Simon, and thank you for going
thank
over.
Thank you, Simon.
And again,
no,
Patrick.
Thank you
to
all.
You
thank you very much. It's
Patrick,
a pleasure to meet
Patrick,
you all.
Pleasure to meet
Patrick,
you, Patrick.
It has been delightful, and I do hope that you will come back and visit with us again.
At any time, happy to. It'd be my honor and privilege.
And Manny and Ashley, well, I know you'll be back.
You're sure about that, Simon?
Oh, yeah. thank you, everyone, for taking part today. It was a great show. And we will be back next week. Same bat channel, same bat time.
Thank you very much. See you all. Cheers.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Okay, I will talk to you folks later. Goodbye.